Hello, Damien Carrick here. Welcome to the Law Report. Today, jaw-dropping telephone bills.
Yeah, in fact, I got home and a week or so after, I had a $191,000 bill land in my inbox.
It's just staggering. It really is. It defies all logic that using your phone overseas could run up this kind of bill.
This precedent setting for us. So when we're looking at complaints about international roaming and those sorts of things, it's something that we will factor into our decision making.
Just imagine you're travelling overseas and your mobile phone is stolen. A month later, you receive a telephone bill for $191,000. Yep, you heard right, $191,000. That's exactly what happened to Kim Beveridge. He's just had a big legal win in the Supreme Court of Victoria Court of Appeal. I'm now joined by Kim Beveridge and his lawyer, James Graham, a senior associate with Madgwicks. Kim Beveridge, take me back to 2014. Who provided your mobile phone service?
At the time I had a postpaid service with TeleChoice.
And TeleChoice, they are a user or a reseller of the Telstra mobile service, aren't they?
Yeah, that's correct.
You were going on this big overseas trip. What arrangements had you made about the use of your phone, say roaming?
Okay, so I inquired about the roaming service a week or so before I travelled overseas. I was requested to pay a bond prior to actually travelling overseas, which I did. And then I activated the roaming service basically on the way to the airport, at which time my local service was disabled.
Where were you going on your big trip?
Okay, so we went to Barcelona. There was a conference there, Mobile World Congress, which is a mobile phone and payments yearly conference that we go to.
And that actually makes the media most years. In fact, there's often a big launch of big telecommunications products.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
So you went there for work?
Yep.
What kind of work do you do? You're a senior executive with the software company, right?
Yeah, so I'm CTO at a company called Novati, and we're a software and solutions provider in the payments and digital space.
Right. So you went on this fantastic business trip to fantastic Barcelona. It didn't all go to plan, though. What happened on the 28th of February?
Yeah, so basically the conference was over. I think it was the Thursday night from memory. We went out, had a few drinks and to a nightclub and stuff afterwards. Upon leaving the nightclub, I was basically pickpocketed. I had my phone stolen. My colleague had some cash stolen. Yeah, that's where it began.
And that was about 5:30 in the morning?
Yeah, it was, yes.
Do you report this theft?
I reported it to the local police the following morning.
So what, about 24 hours later?
It was about 24 hours later when we reported it to the police, yes.
And in terms of informing the telecommunications company, TeleChoice, what happened there?
Yeah, so I informed them approximately 20 hours after, so it was the following evening, but actually they had just notified me that they had detected some suspect calls and suspect behaviour on my account. So they had blocked the account at that point in time.
So why didn't you report the loss of the phone immediately, both to the police and to TeleChoice?
Basically, we had some sightseeing and stuff planned for that day, so I didn't report it till the following evening.
You didn't think it was important?
Not really, no. I mean, my perception was, or my understanding was, that I'd paid a bond. I was under the impression that I had a cap on my account of at least $250. I believed I was protected up to a certain point, and I guess I was prepared to wear a few $100 bill during that day.
Now, in fact...
Yeah, in fact, I got home and a week or so after, I had a $191,000 bill land in my inbox.
A $191,000 bill?
Yes, yep.
What happened?
So what it seems that happened, looking at the call records that we could download from the TeleChoice members area. It seems as though there was a lot of calls. I can't remember the exact amount now, but pages and pages of calls made in that 20-hour period.
1,494.
Okay, yep.
That's James Graham, Kim Beveridge's lawyer. James Graham, say that again. How many calls?
4,484 calls.
Amounting to 1,161 hours, I believe.
Yes.
So what seems to have happened has the scammers, let's say, have activated call forwarding on my service. So it seems like they've removed the SIM card from my phone, inserted it into another phone or some other device, activated call forwarding to forward all calls to some sort of number in Latvia. Then they've set up some sort of service to terminate calls from Australia to Latvia in parallel. So many, many calls could be terminated at the same time.
After your phone was stolen, the SIM card was removed from the phone and used to divert hundreds of calls and hundreds of text messages from Australia to mobile telephone numbers, mainly in Latvia.
It seems that way, yes, based on what we can determine from the call records.
Okay, so a very sophisticated scam, yeah?
It seems that way, yes.
So on the 26th of March, you receive a bill for $191,000. What was your reaction when you got that bill?
Well, amazement, I guess. Yeah, I mean, who could imagine that a mobile phone service could even rack up that much?
It equaled 38 concurrent calls for the whole time. So the calls averaged 10 minutes each, which would have required 38 concurrent calls, plus thousands of SMS messages as well, which seemed to have the same sort of trick.
Yeah. So, James Graham, that would actually suggest that the SIM card was actually kind of replicated, copied and used multiple times.
We don't know if it was cloned or copied, but what was decided in the county court decision is that it was removed from the phone and manipulated somehow so that the fraudsters could clip the ticket on these thousands of phone calls and text messages.
So, James, you act for Kim in this case, and he receives this whopping bill for $191,000. It's then reduced to $34,000. How does that happen?
After we've defended the claim for some 15 months or 9 months during the actual court proceeding, it didn't happen straight away.
So you have this $191,000 bill. It gets reduced to $34,000 bill. And we think it's because that's what Telechoice say they ultimately paid Telstra for the services incurred over this period. Is that the general understanding?
I think they were seeking their out-of-pocket costs with a reduced amount.
Okay, so they take you to court, Kim. They demand that you pay this $191,000, which they ultimately reduced down to $34,000. James, what was the basis of the claim? Was it there was a contract here and this is what's in the contract? What was the basis of their claim?
Telechoice sought to hold Kim to the terms of its standard consumer contract, a contract of adhesion.
And what was your defence?
We ran two defences. The first defence was a defence on the terms of the contract itself and challenged Telechoice's entitlement to charge for call forwarding services under its own contract, and we were successful on that. We also ran an unconscionability defence on which we were partly successful underneath, in the court underneath, and both issues were run at trial.
Basically, this idea of unconscionability, it's that idea of it's unconscionable for them to actually pursue you for this debt.
Yes.
So in June last year, the county court finds in favour of Kim, and it's on the basis that the contract didn't support them demanding this money.
Yes. So call forwarding on Kim's international roaming service wasn't supported under their own contract.
The letter of the contract basically said, look, you're liable for the calls you make, but if somehow you lose your phone and there's a sophisticated scam, you can't then be liable for whatever services are incurred using that scam.
On the terms of Telechoice's contract for this scam involving call forwarding.
Okay, so that was in June last year, and then Telechoice turn around and appeal the decision, and they take it to the Supreme Court of Victoria Court of Appeal, and that decision came down just a few weeks ago. What did that court find?
They agreed with the decision underneath.
Finally, it's over, and finally you're able to speak about this publicly for the first time. Kim Beveridge, that must be an enormous relief for you.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a long battle, I guess, a long defence and pretty stressful time. It has been good to get the Court of Appeal decision and, try and put this behind us.
James Graham, so this Court of Appeal decision, it says the decision of the lower court saying that there is no basis for Kim Beveridge to pay this. He's not liable pursuant to the contract. They uphold that decision. Do they come back and revisit any of the issues around unconscionability, or do they say, look, it was decided at the lower court on that basis and we don't need to enter into this wider issue of unconscionability?
It wasn't reopened, but there were some interesting comments raised in the court below in the judgment, which gives comfort to consumers in these sort of situations.
What did the court say? In the county court, the original county court decision.
Yep. His Honour Judge Murphy held that the quantum of the bond and the international roaming deposit that Kim paid, which totaled, I think, $550, didn't represent the absolute limit, but showed the approximate range that the parties intended to be bound to when they entered into the contract. And I think that's useful for all of us in knowing what the limits of these contracts of adhesion could be.
And this notion of unconscionability, when is it applied by the courts? In what sorts of situations?
Where there is a power imbalance between one party and the other. And it's particularly relevant here where a resourced corporation can essentially impose all of the terms of the contract that it wants on any of us as consumers.
Really interesting. Tim Beveridge, you're much better equipped than the average person to kind of take on this battle. One, you're a tech head, you're in the industry, you understand how it goes, and I'm assuming you're relatively well-resourced as well. Those two things meant that you could take on this fight rather than go cap in hand to Telechoice and say, please sit here and negotiate with me and I'll take whatever I can get.
Yes, to an extent. I mean, we did try and negotiate with them, you know, a number of times, but they were not willing to go down that path. We had to maintain the defence, and yes, I guess I'm lucky that I could follow it through.
In terms of what you guys did you approach the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman?
Yes, I did, yes. That was really the very first step.
Even before you went to see lawyers?
Yeah, for sure, yes. So,
and what happened when you did that?
Yeah, so I presented the issue, followed the process with them. They obviously communicated with Telechoice, et cetera, and reviewed the case. They came back to me and said that because the value was over $50,000, it was out of their jurisdiction. That's all they could advise on. Actually, they recommended that I seek counsel, I guess, yeah.
James?
I think there seems to be some discretion available to the TIO under its terms of reference. The $50,000, Kim actually approached the TIO again after he learned of another instance of a consumer incurring a $500,000 bill.
$500,000.
Yes, yep. And we understand that that consumer's bill was taken on by the TIO and resolved satisfactorily. So it looks like there's discretion.
Are these kinds of cases common?
Yes, although we couldn't find any authorities to closely guide us on it. We found interesting examples in England where media reports show that these sorts of pickpocket type scams were occurring with UK travellers to Spain and other countries. That seemed to lead to a voluntary code adopted by the UK telcos, whereby if a English consumer's phone is stolen whilst overseas and they report it within 24 hours, the consumer's costs are capped at £50. That would have saved Kim in this case.
It does come back to that reporting issue. I mean, Kim, you probably should have reported it ASAP. Do you recognise that in hindsight?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, hindsight's a great thing. Yes, we should have reported it earlier. But as I said, we were under the perception that we were protected up to a limit from this type of thing from happening.
I suppose, though, people listening to this might be going, well, people should report these things ASAP. You'd accept that that is good practice for all of us to do.
Yes, definitely.
But ultimately, the court said, yes, you should have reported it quickly, but that's not the heart of the issue here.
Yes. The heart of the issue here was that Telechoice wasn't entitled to recoup $35,000 under the terms of its own contract for call forwarding on international roaming services. And had it proceeded with its claim for $191,000, it would have been unconscionable for Telechoice to do so. The court found that it wouldn't have been unconscionable for Telechoice to seek $34,000.
Because that's ultimately what they paid Telstra.
Because that was the telco's out-of-pocket costs.
Finally, final question to both of you. I mean, would you like to see some kind of systemic change in this area? Kim?
Look, I think so, yes. I guess that could come from a technology point of view to stop or prevent these types of frauds from happening. and perhaps maybe from a regulation point of view, similar to what the UK have done to protect consumers more. Mm.
My understanding is that since 2014, when this happened to you, there has been the adoption of more kind of bolt-on products provided by Australian telcos. So you can pay your $10 a day or what have you, and then that would perhaps protect you?
I think it will, yes, but there'll be more prepaid type of bolt-ons. So I think the prepaid services have that capability.
James, would you like to see any systemic change here?
Absolutely. Kim tried all of the weapons at his disposal to resolve it. He went to the Ombudsman, he negotiated with the telco, and then was engaged in a proceeding for 2 years. It just shouldn't happen. There should be other standards imposed on the telcos if this sort of conduct is possible. The other disturbing thing is that it seems that there's no obvious mechanism for the telcos to seek to trace back or unwind these charges. So it seems that the Spanish carrier is entitled to payment, the network provider is entitled to payment, and then Telechoice is entitled to payment. So even though it was clear that there was a organised fraud activity here, the only recompense was sought from Kim, not from the source of the problem.
So nobody was taking responsibility for it. They were all just saying this is Kim's fault, rather than acknowledging the fact that there was a fairly big systems fault somewhere.
Everyone was relying on their own contracts, and luckily Kim could rely on the gaps in Telechoice's contract in this case.
Lawyer James Graham, Senior Associate with Madgwicks, talking there with his client Kim Beveridge. I did contact Telechoice to get their perspective on the case. They declined to comment, saying that they are still considering their legal position in respect to this matter. I'm Damien Carrick and you're listening to The Law Report, broadcast on ABC RN, ABC News Radio and Radio Australia. Of course, you might be listening via podcast or via the ABC app on your smartphone, but promise you won't rack up any bills with this. It's totally free.
You have a text message.
And speaking of phones, today we are looking at disputes over telephone bills. Judy Jones is the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman. She's well aware of the Victorian Supreme Court's ruling in the Kim Beveridge and Telechoice dispute.
Look, I don't have a particular view about it. It's an interesting decision and it's certainly one that we will take into account. It is precedent setting for us. So when we're looking at complaints about international roaming and those sorts of things, it's something that we will factor into our decision making.
And into your communications with the party saying this precedent is now here.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a court decision. No, it's a Supreme Court decision. That's part of the law. We apply the law when we're deciding on complaints. So absolutely part of what we'll be looking at now on.
Kim Beveridge says he did approach the TIO to complain about the attempt by Telechoice to pursue him for the $191,000, which was then subsequently reduced to $34,000. But the TIO declined to get involved. He was told that the TIO can only get involved in cases where a disputed bill is $50,000 or less. Is that right?
That's right. The amount in dispute has to be $50,000 or less. Although I do have recommendation-making powers between $50,000 and $100,000, but it wouldn't be a binding decision. So under $50,000, if push comes to shove and the matter can't be settled, then I can make a binding determination. But if it was over between $50,000 and $100,000, I can only make a recommendation, which the provider wouldn't have to follow.
Look, I know it's before your time, but back in September 2014, there was a horror story of a mobile telephone user being charged $571,000 when his phone was stolen in Europe. And there were media reports in both Fairfax and News Limited that reported that the debt was waived after the man's father complained to the TIO. What do you know about that case?
Well, we don't talk about individual cases, and as you say, it was before my time. It would seem unusual, although if the man complained to the TIO, that may have been sufficient for the, without us taking any further action, for the provider to take some action. I'm not sure what would have happened there.
Mm. How common are disputes or complaints about debts connected to overseas roaming?
They're very unusual, so less than 1% of our cases. And in fact, between our last annual report for the 15-16 financial year, they declined from the previous year. which is interesting. So very small numbers, so less than 1%, and on the decline.
And were they for large amounts of money? Do you have a sense of how big they
were?
No,
they're generally not for larger amounts of money. I mean, this is quite an unusual amount, I think. So often it's about, can end up being about a misunderstanding about the way roaming works, rather than instances such as this.
I'm told by James Graham, the lawyer for Kim Beveridge, that in the UK now there is a voluntary industry code that's been adopted by providers. And if a phone is stolen overseas and the theft is reported within 24 hours, the bill will be capped at £50. Do you think a system like that should be adopted here?
That could be quite useful. Depends, the carriers would be having to forego some things there. But I think that, yeah, it's a balancing of the rights of the parties, really.
With Kim Beveridge, he didn't report the theft for, I think, about 20 hours. In terms of complaints about charges arising from after mobiles have been stolen, is that often an issue about when somebody reports a theft, how soon after it goes missing?
Well, often people don't know that it's been stolen. They think they've mislaid it. So it's a bit of a sliding scale, I think. I'm not aware of any particular cases where it's been a particularly long time, but I know myself when our house was burgled here in Melbourne, it took us a while to work out that, in fact, it had been burgled rather than my husband just couldn't find his phone, which is not an uncommon occurrence.
Let's talk a little bit more about the work of the TIO more generally, the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman. How many complaints do you receive a year?
In the last annual report was 112,000 complaints, which is a lot.
And what are the most common issues?
Well, the most common issue is always customer service. Leaving aside customer service, billing is the most common complaint. And then you have things like contracts, faults, those sorts of things follow on from that.
And what are your powers? You can knock heads together?
The first thing we do is refer them back to the provider, because best practice dispute resolution is if you can resolve it directly with the parties talking together, that's the best outcome. They've got access to all the information. If it comes back to us as an unresolved complaint, then we start a conciliation process. So we talk to the parties and see if we can work with them to find out more about what's happened and negotiate a settlement. If that doesn't work, then in a much smaller number of cases, we'll conduct an investigation. And at the end of that, if it isn't resolved, I can make a binding determination, which is enforceable through the ACMA.
And how often do you do that?
Very rarely. I think I've done two since I've been in the role, so two since March last year.
How many negotiated settlements do you get?
About 10% of complaints come back to us as unresolved from the referral back to the provider. So if 112,000, 10% of that's
12,000.
So most of those are settled.
And some people walk away from the process not having resolved their dispute?
Yeah, so when I say settled, they're resolved. So, and it might be on the basis that we tell the consumer that we have investigated or had a look or looked at all the information, and we think what the provider has done is fair and reasonable. So I guess for the consumer, that's not actually a settlement, but for us, it's resolved without a decision from me.
And what outcomes are achieved from conciliation and investigation?
Well, a whole range. So it might be fixing something. It might be wiping charges. If I think of an international roaming example, so a customer went to Indonesia, bought an international roaming pack, but had trouble activating it. Obviously, he was using his phone, and when came back with thousands of dollars of charges. So when the provider looked at it, once he came to us, found that there was in fact a technical fault that meant that the international roaming pack couldn't be activated on his phone. And the outcome of that was to wipe the charges and to provide the technical fix. So sometimes all the consumer is wanting is a thing to be fixed quickly. And other times there is some remedy that's appropriate in terms of refund of charges or a credit on the bill.
The government last week asked ACMA, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, to investigate problems with the rollout of the NBN. A lot of people complaining about long waits to get connected, slow speeds once they are connected, and then long delays to get any problems fixed. Are you seeing an increasing number of complaints around the NBN?
Well, we are, which is kind of natural as the rollout increases. So yes, it is increasing our work, and we're seeing some of those things, that the similar things that you just mentioned.
Can you tell me about some of the cases you've had?
There was a small business that was connecting to the NBN. They were promised speeds of 40 to 100 megabits a second, but in fact got down to about 3 at times. The small business owner also got a modem provided and was told that the provider would provide technical support for that modem, which didn't happen. So when the small business owner came to us, what he wanted was faster speeds and technical support, and had found the whole, obviously found the whole process very frustrating. So the outcome from our process was that they refunded the cost of the modem, they provided the business with 1 month's free service and discounted the service fees up to 50% and fixed the technical problem, which meant the speeds were within the range that had been promised. So that was a really good outcome.
Judy Jones, Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman. Una Lawrence is the Director of Policy with the Australian Communications Consumer Action Network, known as ACAN. She says in recent years, her organisation has seen a decline in the number of consumers who are disgruntled about roaming bills. And she says this welcome development is probably due to the telcos lifting their game.
One of the interesting things that's happened is the market has shifted. Now, by that I mean that the telcos have actually, fortunately, introduced some products to actually assist their customers when they're roaming overseas. So you can get these kind of bolt-on packs that you buy before leaving home. You set it up before leaving home. And it can be, in the case of Telstra or Optus, it's a $10 a day fee. In the case of Vodafone, it's a $5 a day fee. And that allows you to use your phone while you're travelling.
So even if it gets stolen and gets used, that's the maximum amount you'll be paying, right?
Well, it depends. You couldn't really conclusively say that because it would depend on how your SIM card was used. So it wouldn't necessarily protect you from the beverage kind of set of circumstances where that outrageous fraud was perpetrated. But theoretically, yeah, it should protect you because you would know that you're only going to be charged, say, $10 a day.
What advice does ACAN give to consumers who are travelling overseas about how best to protect themselves?
Well, it depends on, of course, what the individual consumer's needs are, because if you want to be accessible on your home mobile number, and that's important for you for business reasons or because you have to stay in touch on that number for family reasons or whatever, we strongly advise people to arrange to use one of these bolt-on packs with their provider. If they don't mind going overseas and using a different number, we think the best solution by far is to buy a local SIM when you arrive at your destination. So that means you have to take your SIM card out of your phone when you get there, go to a local store of whatever telco you may think is the most suitable. They can help you by putting the new SIM in, and then you just switch your phone on and activate the service.
Kim Beveridge, what do you do now when you go overseas in terms of your roaming?
Yes, so I've switched to a prepaid service. So the TeleChoice was a postpaid service, meaning you get billed after the fact, obviously. So I and all of my family have now switched to a prepaid service. Look, it's not as convenient sometimes, but you know what you're up for. You know you can recharge your service and that's it. It'll be cut off after your balance is reached.
Some sound advice there from Kim Beveridge, the man who received a telephone bill for $191,000 and spent the next 3.5 years fighting TeleChoice all the way to the Victorian Supreme Court. That's the program for this week. Thanks to producer Anita Barrow and technical producer Kerry Dell. You can follow us on Twitter at LawReportRN, that's with a capital L and a capital R, or at Damien_Carrick. Talk to you next week with more Law.